Welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. I'm Dr. Paul, and my guest today is Christine White. She's a fellow pediatrician. I love talking with fellow pediatricians. She went through a transition over the 4 years of COVID from being in a big group practice to starting her own practice, Freedom Pediatrics. And we talk about that journey and how to embrace the new knowledge and new information of deep diving into what keeps kids sick, what we can do to change it, and then learning the skills to help others with this. It's all about lifestyle. It's a wonderful interview, very enlightening. And then Dee Dee wraps it up beautifully by having that woman-to-woman personal stuff and then pushing her a little bit on some of the issues so that it becomes real clear. This is the most important thing we can do as parents, is figure out what to do that will keep our kids robustly healthy. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. I want to talk about integrity. It just touched me with the interview with Dr. Christine that you're watching today, how she navigated her whole journey of becoming aware that, my goodness, there might be a problem, there might be an issue with vaccines. And rather than just ignoring that or sweeping it under the rug, because it's highly inconvenient as a pediatrician to change what we've always done. And as she pointed out in her interview, it's like a religion. But she had the integrity. And I know so many of you watching have had similar challenges in our lives. We all do, where we're faced with new information that makes the old information no longer true, not acceptable. And it requires integrity to do the right thing. And I am so grateful to all of you who have faced that struggle and chosen with love and kindness to have integrity and do what's right and stand up for our children and for ourselves and for a better world. Thank you. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome, folks, to another episode of With the Wind. I am honored to have pediatrician Dr. Christine White with us today. So welcome, Christine.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I always love talking to pediatricians. We're a special breed. I don't know you very well, so I bet the audience doesn't know you very well. I'd be interested to know why you went into pediatrics. What motivated you to be a doctor, and just briefly how you ended up in pediatrics?
So when I went to med school, I was going to be a geriatrician, and I love
big
old
switch.
People. I know. I volunteered for 4 years in college at an old folks home, and I taught them an exercise class every Friday. And so that's what I was going to do. And my first rotation was in internal medicine, and I spent a month at the VA. And after that, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't be a doctor. And then my next rotation was pediatrics. And I realized this is what I need to do. I still love old people, but I need to be able to fix something sometimes. And I just love kids. I love that, number one, they don't like to be sick. They like to play and have fun and live their life. And even when they are sick, you don't even know it all the time. And I like that I can usually help them. But I really also like that I can take a tiny human and have an influence on how their life turns out by teaching them and their parents healthy ways to live and smart things to try to do to have a long, healthy life. So I guess that's how I got there.
Yeah. I'm just smiling because I had the exact same sequence. I went to internal medicine at a VA hospital in Hanover, New Hampshire. And it was horrible as we were patching up these smoking, drinking, lying fools so they could go out and smoke and drink and lie some more. And then I did peds and was like, oh, I love kids. Everything you just said, it was like we had the exact, it was like, I'm sold. I'm a pediatrician. Right. And how long have you been a pediatrician now?
I finished residency in the year 2000, so about 24 years.
Oh, plenty long. You don't look that old. So,
yeah, you should. When I was a senior in high school, I looked 12.
Okay.
So it was horrible then, but it's wonderful now.
There you go. Yep. That's awesome.
Yep.
What was your work environment leading up to? I know, and we'll get to it. We're going to end on Freedom Pediatrics, which is your new model. Okay. I'm curious, what was your work environment leading up to what you're doing now?
Right out of residency, I worked in Austin, Texas at a general peds office for a couple of years. And then I had my first baby and I moved back closer to home to Kansas City. And I worked at an ER for about 9 months, but I was seeing a lot of adults and that was a little uncomfortable for me. And so then for the last 20 years, 21 and a half years, I've been at a pediatric office with six other partners. And so it was general peds. I did checks and sick visits and unfortunately, I did a lot of basically psychiatry and psychology. And I like doing that. I like trying to help people that are having those struggles. But yeah, just full-time general pediatrician, all the normal stuff that comes.
Yeah, sounds very similar to my journey. So let's move to close to the COVID time. And I think I remember you sharing that in around 2020, you were starting to get involved in the schools. What led to that? Why? What was going on? Share a little more about that.
So in March of 2020, when COVID hit, within a couple of weeks, you could see some stuff coming out of China. And I realized, I really don't think that this is a huge risk for kids. I was reading everything I could find. But as we got into April and May, I was seeing these kids that had been locked down. They were coming in with very severe anxiety and depression. And it wasn't the type that you could help. You could not budget. You could not really help most of these kids. They were just really affected by what was going on. And I was very concerned that this was going to go into the next school year. And so when I saw in our school district that was going to happen, I started speaking at the school board meetings and saying, you guys, as a pediatrician, this is what I'm seeing. Other countries are letting their kids go to school. They did let them go to school during the pandemic, and they did fine. And we have more data now. This is August of 2020. This mainly affects adults. And yes, kids get COVID, but they do very well with it by far and large. I spoke at every school board meeting for about 6 or 7 months to try to get the kids in school. And then I also, after that was approved, I started speaking about getting parents and children the opportunity for the following school year, the 21-20 school year, 21-22, to let them have the choice whether or not they would wear a mask for that coming up school year, still months away.
How was that received?
The problem with that was I had decided in March of 2021 to run for the school board in my school district. And it was not because of anything related to COVID. It was because of the way that we teach reading in our school district. And actually, most school districts teach it the same way. They teach it with whole literacy, which is basically teaching kids to read with sight words. And I realized about 3 years before this that my youngest daughter, she is a freshman and she's very smart. And I was like, hey, what are you reading in ELA? And she goes, I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird. I can't stand it. And I said, oh my gosh, I played scout in that when I was in seventh grade. I love that book. I said, let's read it. And I sat down with her and I made her read it to me. And I said, do you understand what just happened there? She goes, I don't understand what happened. And I realized, oh my gosh, she can read the words, but she would skip over some. I took her and got her evaluated. She had some reading issues. We've done tutoring now. She's doing great. She's at KU at college now. She's doing great. But I realized that's the way we taught reading. I never knew. I didn't pay attention. I just sent my kids to the best school district in Kansas, which is what we're touted as. But we were not teaching reading. And we had 25% of our kids that could not read at grade level, both in fourth grade and 10th grade. And that was pre-pandemic. It's worse now. I researched. I found a program that they used in Mississippi. And they brought their kids in Mississippi up from the worst in the country to top third, better than Kansas, which was very surprising to me. And I figured I can train every K-3 teacher for $800 each, and we can teach these teachers how to teach phonics and how to teach these kids to read. And that's what I ran for school board on. Because if you can't read, as you learn to read till third grade, and then you read to learn from fourth grade on. And as a pediatrician, I was seeing so many kids with ADHD. And for 15 years, I'm like, okay, let's talk about reading. And so many kids couldn't read. And I was like, why can't these kids read? Now I know. And so my goal was, let's train the teachers to teach the kids to read, and then our students will be successful. Well, that's what I ran for school board on. But all that anybody wanted to talk about was that this was a pediatrician that wanted kids in school, and this was a pediatrician that wanted parents to have the right to choose whether the kid wore a mask or not. And so I was actually forced out of the school board race. I had to choose between my job and running for school board. And I have four kids, dropped out of the school board race. But that's when I started to look at, okay, what else has been going on that I've been taught or told or believed that maybe is not 100% accurate. And so that's really when my life really started to change.
Oh boy. Yeah. And your big change has just been in the last 4 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're willing to talk about it, I'm interested in what's happening to our kids, what's happening in our country, what's happening with doctors who have tried to speak out like yourself. Mm-hmm. So pick any of those to start with.
I think what's happening with our kids is, so I was born in 1970. I grew up in a time where it was very rare to have a kid in your class that really had some serious illness. Maybe you had one diabetic. Maybe you had one kid with asthma, and we all knew it, and it was very rare, and we were very supportive of that. But now, you are actually almost the rare kid if you don't have a chronic disease. And people can say, our genetics, it's genetics. No, it's not. Nope. It's environmental. And I don't think it's one thing. I don't think that there's one thing you can point to and say, this is what is causing the extreme chronic disease that we see in our kids. It is a toxic soup of how we grow our food, how we package our food, the foods that our children eat. It's processed. It's got artificial oils that are man-made. It's due to what's in our water. It's due to the fact that our children don't sleep enough. It's due to the fact that our children are on devices all the time. It's due to the fact that our kids are stressed out. It's due to the fact that we give so many vaccines at one time at such a young age. And it's not just one thing. It is, again, it's a toxic soup. And for some kids, one of those toxins may not be what triggers something for them. And for others, one of those things might trigger something for them. And the problem is we don't know, because nobody who has the money has done the studies to look and see why are we having this explosion of chronic disease in our kids. And so I've always been a pediatrician that has spoken to parents about sleep and diet and nutrition and hydration and exercise and being outside in the actual sun, not just exercise. It's better to exercise outside in the sun, and devices and limiting devices and really looking closely at what are you eating. And I think that just in the last 4 years, that has become much more important to me, because I've realized there are things that I can change and I can help these parents and kids change. I can't affect grandma's environment. I can't affect mom's environment unless I get them before they're pregnant, but I can affect going forward. And that is what I try to help these families understand and point out. And I wasn't trained in holistic or functional medicine, but I learn something new every day, literally. And I'm very willing to learn more, but I do the best I can. And that is my goal, is to give health care, not to give sick care. I am tired of us putting a Band-Aid on problems. Every time you come to the office, do this, do that, come back next time it happens. No. Okay, you have this. Let's figure out why you maybe have this. Let's make you feel better, but let's figure out what has led to you having this. Oh, this is the third or fourth time you've had this. Why is that? What can we do at a root level to help you? That's what I think about what's going on with our children. As far as what I think has gone on with people that have spoken out against the mainstream narrative over the last 4 years, it has not gone well for them as a group. Some individuals have been much more hurt by it. I can speak more to physicians just because that's what I've seen. Some physicians have lost their licenses. Many physicians have lost their jobs. Many physicians didn't lose anything because they were threatened and they backed off, like I did. If I could do anything different from when I quit the school board race, it would have been to stay in the school board race and take what would have come. But I am a braver person now than I was in 2021. I am a completely different person now than I was in 2021. And that's okay. I give myself grace for that. You can only do what you can do, and you sometimes have to survive and live to fight another day. But it has not gone well for people who dared to speak a narrative that was not the accepted one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have started your own practice now, correct? Freedom Pediatrics. Right. That probably actually... Nice name, by the way. That probably gave you some freedom not to be in it. I was in a group practice, and quite frankly, when I would go to them and say, hey, I have a concern about the hepatitis B for newborns. It's got all this aluminum, and oh, that was not met with a lot of acceptance, right? And so probably as you're starting to, isn't it exciting to do holistic health and functional medicine?
Yes.
And look at root causes and offer our patients something that has a real high likelihood of actually making a long-lasting positive difference.
It's wonderful. Yes.
It's so wonderful. So it's so freeing. So I imagine now that you've started Freedom Pediatrics, you are a little more free to really do what you want to do that'll move the needle. I think we could say you are now in the medical freedom movement and supporting parental choice. Do you have thoughts that you can share about what parental choice is, the things you're most concerned about that you want to give parents freedom to choose?
Yeah. One of the nicest things about this practice, Freedom Pediatrics is not just freedom for me. It's primarily freedom for parents and children to be able to ask a question of their pediatrician and not immediately physically cower or mentally cower and wait to be shamed or yelled at or schooled in what the actual truth is or have their instincts questioned. It is it's a dialogue. It's a conversation between me and the parents and the kids. And you can ask me anything you want to ask me, and I might not know the answer, but I'll go learn and I'll tell you what I find, and I'll give you my answer if I know it. But I want to know where you are too. And then I will help you make a decision for your child that you think is best for your child. And I think at the base of parental choice is that it is your child, that no one else has the right to tell you how to parent that child, whether it is medical decisions or it's educational decisions. It's your child. And Freedom Pediatrics also is the freedom for me to speak freely to you and to tell you what I think is best for your individual child, to also tell you what I do know about medicine or about food or about vaccines, and take your individual child and work with you to find the best answer for that one person. Healthcare and medicine is really individual. It's not one size fits all. And so that's the freedom comes in that part too. I don't know if I answered the question right or not.
No, I like it. What city are you in, or town?
So I'm in a suburb of Kansas City. It's Overland Park, Kansas.
Okay. Just for our viewers who might be very excited to find you, good to know where you are.
Yeah.
And so on that parental choice thought, I'm concerned, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about school-based health clinics. It sounded like such a wonderful idea, just like universal health insurance sounded like such a wonderful idea. Level the playing field. Those who don't have access, we give them access. But I'm hearing and reading things that make me very concerned, and I wonder what your thoughts are about school-based health clinics, risks, benefits, that sort of thing.
Right. I think it is a slippery slope. And I do know that there are kids in our society that don't have access to healthcare. If they need healthcare, they probably go to an ER. They don't have a primary care doctor. Maybe they don't have a doctor. Maybe their parents work two or three jobs and can't get them there when they're sick. Maybe they don't have the money to be treated for their asthma or whatever. And so then you start to look at, okay, how can we get this care delivered? But the school is a place that most kids go. And there has been somewhat of a safety net there for the school nurse or a school counselor. But when you start to say, okay, we're going to bring in nurse practitioners or whoever and start to really deliver full comprehensive care from vaccines to medications to counseling in the school that the parent may not know what's going on, to prescribing other medicines for other conditions, and how much of this do the parents know, and how much of this is being driven by a person who is a minor and should not be making decisions for themselves. Because again, a 14-year-old brain, a 16-year-old brain, an 18-year-old brain is not the same as a 26 to 30-year-old brain. And so really, I think the parents should be making these decisions unless it's an emergency and you brought somebody to the ER in a trauma. And so I think you have to be very careful what is offered at those. And it really needs to be looked at. Where's the funding coming from? I know where the funding's coming from. It's coming from people that want to have more access to your children. And so it sounds good on paper, but it's a Pandora's box. And I am much more concerned about it than I am thinking, oh, this is great. This will be wonderful. This will be what these kids need.
Yeah.
No.
I had two girls around age 16 who developed severe neurological problems. They were both top students, athletes in, you know, their varsity sport, whatever. One was soccer. Maybe they were both soccer. And they were severely neurologically compromised. And the mom's there with each of these girls at different times in my office. And they didn't know. We had sent them to specialists. Nobody could figure out what was going on. I finally asked the right question. You didn't get any vaccines, did you? Because I've got their chart. I know that I didn't give them any vaccines in the recent past. Oh, yeah, we got one at school, that HPV. Mm. And the mom's jaw, you did? They didn't know. And so that's what you're speaking to. And I agree. Parents need to be involved in all healthcare decisions right through age 17, 18.
Right.
Because, like you said, there are powerful interests that can make money off of our children.
Yep.
And vaccines is one of them. And so, yeah. What about what's being taught in the schools? Because you were getting involved there much more so than I ever was. And so I've only been learning recently about there's some real, I don't know, indoctrination, if you will, about different things. What are you most worried about there?
There's a few things that came out of COVID that are good. One of them is that everybody was at home and everybody saw what was being taught to their children over Zoom. And all of a sudden, people that thought, oh, we go to this wonderful school district, everything is wonderful, I do not need to even think about it, it's all taken care of. I think everybody started to realize, oh my goodness, I need to pay attention. And not only were the kids not necessarily being taught a rigorous academic course load, but there was stuff being taught that would, in most people's books, be better taught at home. Different values, different maybe political types of views. It's just things that is really the parent's job to do. I send my kid to school to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. Yes, I expect that child behave well. And yes, if they get out of line, please let me know. I am on your side. I am not going to go in there and tell you that my daughter is a perfect angel because I know my daughter and sometimes she's not. But I don't expect you to teach her things that I should be teaching her. I don't expect you to be putting ideas into her head that should not ever be put there, but definitely shouldn't be put there at a young age, such as gender ideas. I don't expect there to be rallies held that are a school-functioned event or a school-sponsored event for social or political issues that are going on in the world at the time. That is not the school's job. And when I was running for school board, people would call me and say, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And really, I started really looking at the curriculum as much as you can, because you sometimes can't find the curriculum. But as much as I could, I downloaded it and I had a group of parents and we went through it for grades K through 12. And we evaluated as much of it as we could get our hands on. And we found instances where there were things in there that really was not academic. It was more social or political. And this is just what the students get. A lot of times the teachers have a different guidebook to go by. So everything that is being said is not necessarily in the thing you can get your hands on. And so we had made a list of things that we wanted to bring to the school board. I never got a chance to do that because I had dropped out. But it's not just that your kids aren't being academically challenged. They're being taught things, they're being told things that I don't think should be taught. It's just very sad to me that we really don't expect our kids to work as hard anymore. When I ran for school board, I ran as a group with two other people with very like-minded ideas. And one of them, he had been a teacher and then a lawyer, and now he's like a financial guy. And he really wanted to really teach kids to be good thinkers and to critically think about, okay, this book or this essay or this poem, and not just be good thinkers and good readers, but good writers. And it is very interesting to me that we do not expect that of our kids anymore. It's almost, okay, here's the test. We're going to teach you for the test, and then you guys spit it out. And that's not just, okay, here's your history test. It's, oh, we have these standardized tests coming up. This affects our standings as a school. We are going to teach the test for the next 10 school days. That's what we're going to teach you. That is not what I want my kid taught in school. I want my kid taught things so that my kid learns. The last few years my kids were in school, I had them stop taking the standardized test because that's not what they're there for. They did other stuff. They read books. They did other things. And parents don't know that they can do that. So
yeah, I didn't know that.
Right. There's a lot of things that you can say. They're not going to this assembly. They're not going to see this talk about suicide. They're not going to see this demonstration of alternative sexual views. They aren't going to take these tests. I wish parents knew they didn't have to, the kids didn't have to take the tests. And you can really opt out of quite a few things at the schools. And you can even say that I would like my child to do more of their work on pencil and paper, and I want them to have an actual book. And that was another thing that I ran for school board on, was I would like to decrease the amount of technology our kids are exposed to at school. I want to give them a book. I want them to write on a piece of paper. I want to teach them cursive. I want to get back to what humans have always done well with, which is touching things and different ways to put that input into your brain.
I think you should go back on the school board. You sound like amazing. I love all the points you're making. So you were already seeing mental health challenges in kids even before COVID hit. And then I think we sure saw so much anxiety was the biggie. Fear and anxiety and panic disorder and yes, ADD, ADHD and all of that. What have you seen since the pandemic and what's our solution? How do we move forward? Because this is our world now.
Yeah. And luckily, I will say, once the kids got to go back to school, the majority of them definitely came out of the worst of that anxiety and depression. But there are kids that have been permanently changed by marinating in that fear that we marinated in for so long, watching CNN or Fox or whatever your news was, and seeing the numbers. And maybe you were a scared kid, but maybe your parents were also scared. And so you just became very fearful. And I think some kids will not be able to rewire that teaching. I think that they are permanently different. Luckily, the majority of them have had significant improvement, but probably everybody, most of them have a little bit of a change in their brain, and that will stick with them. As far as what we need to do to decrease the mental health epidemic that we have, which was there before COVID, but has worsened and I think also is getting more press time. Again, it's not one thing. It's like, how do we get into this mess? How you get out of it is you look at all the different factors that go into it. It is, first of all, a healthy lifestyle, which is nutrition, sleep, exercise, outside time, limiting drastically electronics, helping your kids learn how to deal with stress. So it's, first of all, at the base of it all is a healthy lifestyle, which that can really fix, I would say, 90 to 95% of the problems that we do have with our health. What are we doing as a society? But I think we have to also look at, what are we doing as parents in our homes? Are we on our phones all the time? Are we making sure that we keep technology out of the come home from school hours to the bedtime hours? Are we focused on our kids? Are we talking to our kids? Are we making a family meal a priority as many nights a week as we can? Are we limiting the number of activities our kids are in so we can prioritize a family meal? You don't need to be in four sports. You don't need to be eating in the car. You need to be eating with your family and talking about things and building that connection so that when something stressful comes up, you have that base and your family is there for you. We need to be looking at, how do we teach parents, if you see something, how to recognize it and where to get help after you have also fixed all these other things? I think, but really at the basis of it, I really think cell phones and access to cell phones is probably one of the two or three biggest reasons that we're in the state we're in right now, because multiple studies have shown when kids are on cell phones for hours a day, they become more isolated, they become more anxious, they're more likely to become depressed. Kids should be interacting with other humans in person. Kids should be going outside and playing with their friends. Kids should be driving in their car to Sonic to eat unhealthy food with their friends when they're 16. That's what human brains learn and thrive on. They don't thrive on this on your phone. That is bad for our brains. And oh my goodness, I have kids that are in fourth grade. At my old practice, I had kids that were in fourth grade, and I'm like, oh, is that your mom's cell phone? And they're like, no, it's mine. And I'm like, oh, well, does it actually have service? Oh yeah, it's fully functional, like smartphone. And so I've, for probably 8 or 10 years, I've been telling parents, do not get your kid a cell phone until they are at least in ninth grade, bare minimum. And then you limit the social media they have access to. And you put rules on this, and you put rules on video games. I love the families that are like, no video games Monday through Thursday, and then a very small amount on the weekends. You set your life up so that you live kind of old school. I lived in the 70s. My mom would feed us Cheerios or Cinnamon Toast, and she'd give us like $2. And me and my brother would take off on our bikes, and we would go with our posse of friends, and we'd go to the creek, and we'd go to Quick Trip and play video games and eat red licorice. And it was awesome. We'd come home in time for dinner. And I mean, it was great. And she didn't know where we were, but we were fine. And we had Atari and play that for 12 minutes, but it was not the same. And that is what kids need. That is how to raise a good human.
Yeah. I would add that our world and our environment, as you talked about at the beginning, has become so toxic in terms of pesticides, herbicides, and what's in the food and the water that, in addition to all the lifestyle things you mentioned, it's vital. Every chance you get, every opportunity, go organic, avoid pesticides and herbicides. They're so toxic. It just adds this huge burden on us. Right. But I love everything else you highlighted. And then, of course, from my work, I think you have to consider vaccines a very big toxin. It's not that we're not going to get into that debate here, but it's just an acceptance and awareness that it is a choice that you need to consider.
Yes, I agree.
Wonderful. You've summed up everything so beautifully. I'm going to have you spend a few minutes with Dee Dee so you guys can have that woman-to-woman talk and put an exclamation point on this interview. It was so nice getting to know you, Christine.
All right. Thank you very much.
And if you had to have your last thought for our audience, what do you think is the most important thing for them going forward?
The most important thing going forward is to know what you believe and to be willing to stand up for what you believe. Because what happened the last 4 years is not an isolated event. And with the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty or agreement or whatever they want to call it these days, COVID was a dress rehearsal. And you need to know your values and your beliefs and what you want for your children. And you need to start building a group of people that you trust to learn from, to get help from. And you need to do that now so that when it is needed, you have it.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Christine. Thanks for being willing to join me and talk about some personal things.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to name you Dr. Supermom. Oh. After listening to that interview, oh my gosh, I'm just so excited for you. So I was PTO president for years, always room mom, all those things, but I'm just a mom. And during that time, I think that's the thing is, gosh, I'm listening to you talk to him and I'm like, a pediatrician running for the school board, understanding our kids. Oh my gosh, every board that would be incredible. I'm mad at for Dr. Paul for never doing that.
Oh.
But the difficult part is, I would think too, like you said, you had to choose what's important at that time. And that's what stopped you from doing the school board race, because we do have to think about our own personal lives and our choices. But you made a comment, which is, I always ask, if you can do things differently, what would you do now? And you said, so talk to a pediatrician or a mom out there who has this amazing information and wants to run for a school board, but they are fearful. What do you say to them?
Unfortunately, in our current culture, you have to look at yourself financially and see, okay, it's not if, it's when they come at you. And they can be either side. I'm not saying it's one side or the other. But when they come at you and it gets dirty and it gets threatening and it can be scary, do you think that you can go the course? Do you think that your family can tolerate what is going to come? Do you think that you personally can tolerate it? Do you think you financially can tolerate it? What is your level of tolerance for that? Because unfortunately, it's typically not made about the issues. It's made about something else that makes a wonderful soundbite and gets the story into the paper. And so I have had a lot of people reach out to me that want to run. And my first question is always, what is your job and what is your spouse's job? And how strong are your children? Because unfortunately, that's what it boils down to. You can have a wonderful candidate who just gets destroyed, who really, truly is going to do things that is going to help children, but they don't want the other stuff that comes with you. And they will do their best to keep you out of there.
And our choices, that's something that first of all, how old are, do you have all four girls or do you have a boy in there?
All girls, they're 19 to 25.
Okay. That's the other thing. My sons will be 25 this year too. And when you're in it though, when they're in school, they do suffer some of the consequences for what we say and what we speak up.
Yeah.
And I think that's the tricky part is once they're out of school, why would we run and go do anything on the school board? Our child's not in there.
Right.
But so I think you should go ahead and run for school board. I think you should get your butt in there. You don't, your kids aren't going to suffer now.
Yeah.
So I think that is the hard part. My son stayed home from school. Had to stay home from school for 2 weeks because they were giving all the kids the H1N1 shot that was a live virus. My dad, who lived with us at the time, couldn't be exposed to that. So Ryder stayed home. I wasn't giving Ryder shots at that point anyway. So Ryder had to stay home. When Ryder went back into school, three of the kids came up to him and said, wow, bullying him and teasing him and say, wow, that must be sad that your mom doesn't love you enough to give you that vaccine.
Yeah.
Luckily, my child is a little has learned how to stand up for his rights and said, I'm sorry that your mom didn't love you enough to keep you home and protect you. That's the thing. But if Ryder wasn't strong enough to stand up to that, they do suffer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to put that out there. So speaking out can be risky. Mm-hmm. And now do you feel like you still have to be very careful with what you say, you share?
Yeah. I think you still have to be careful because in every state, people can make a complaint to the Board of Healing Arts against you, and they're not your patient, and you've never treated them. They just don't like your political views. And then you get to defend that. And so, unfortunately, you have to self-censor to some degree if you want to continue to practice medicine. Yes.
And that's why I feel like there are a lot of amazing pediatricians like you out there. But it's not advertised. Like people always say, how do I find somebody? You have to be careful where you put yourself, how you advertise yourself.
Right.
So one of my other questions is, do you feel comfortable educating that vaccines aren't safe and effective in your practice? Or do you have to be very careful how you say it even to your own patients?
The thing is you don't have to have any opinions about anything. Mm-hmm. When you are giving informed consent, you can give informed consent. You can get out the package insert and go through the package insert. You can have copies of studies that you send to them. And you can give them information about the benefits of vaccines, especially for certain people, and the risks of vaccines, as much as we know them. And that is all part of informed consent. Unfortunately, in our day and age, in pediatrics especially, most appointments are 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
For 5 minutes of that, the nurse is taking vitals and doing all that stuff and putting the patient's note in. And then you get in there and now you're down to 9 or 10 minutes. You don't have time to go through informed consent. And so you hand them the VIS forms and you say, do you have any questions? And that's informed consent. Informed consent. That is not informed consent. Unfortunately, a lot of pediatricians actually don't know the risks of vaccines. I didn't know the risk of vaccines until the last few years. And I'm not saying that there is not benefit to vaccines, but I think that every vaccine should be looked at for when is it the most benefit for that individual patient? And are there risk factors specific to this child? And so that is all part of informed consent. If I have a family that does mission trips to Pakistan, where they still have polio, that's a different conversation than somebody that is a homebody and lives in Overland Park, Kansas, and never goes outside of a 12-mile radius. It's a different lifestyle. Their risk factors are different. If I have a mom that's Hep B positive and she's delivering a baby, that's a different conversation than a mom who's Hep B negative. And so I always tell them the benefits of vaccines, and I always tell them these are the risks that we know of, and then we talk more. So I'm not making anything up. I am stating facts that is either written by the CDC or by a published article.
I guess that's where my question comes in, is the CDC isn't always telling you everything, right? Because the CDC says it's safe that Hep B is given to babies at birth. So my question is, it's not safe to give Hep B at birth to a non-Hep B mom. Do you, when you just said the benefit of the vaccine, do you say that there's absolutely no benefit to giving a child the Hep B vaccine at birth?
So what I say is there are a few different ways to get Hep B. You can contract Hep B coming through an infected birth canal. You can contract Hep B through the sharing of dirty needles with IV drugs. You can contract Hep B through sexual activity with someone who's Hep B positive. You can contract Hep B if you live closely in a household or in a close-knit neighborhood with people who are Hep B positive, because you do run the risk over time of having some blood exposure. And so if you live in a high-risk household or community, there's potentially more benefit to you. So I ask parents, do you have any of these risk factors? And then I say, your baby's risk for hepatitis B is extremely low. Here's the VIS form, and here's what the CDC says, and do you have any questions? So I don't make a decision for a parent,
right?
Because it's the parent's choice. I will provide information. You can ask me any question. I am not going to make the decision for you. I will give you information. Oftentimes when people do a little more digging and then start to ask questions and start to look into things themselves and know they have some time to look at it, and that ultimately the choice is theirs, they start to say, why would I give my newborn this Hep B shot? Mm-hmm. I don't see a benefit to that. Maybe before my child is 16, maybe before they think about having sex, maybe then I think about it, because 40 to 50% of people lose their Hep B antibodies before they turn 16 or 17. So right when they need the antibodies, a decent percentage of them have lost them. I'm not saying Hep B vaccine doesn't have a role to play, but it has a role to play when you are engaging in those high-risk behaviors.
Right. So
maybe mid-teens. And then you have that antibody to carry you through for 10 to 15 years until you hopefully get married and have one partner. So does that answer the question?
But again, now I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. So you're saying that do you feel like you have to present it that way because to protect yourself?
I feel like I don't know that I have to is not the word I would use.
Okay.
I do present it that way because that is full informed consent. It is not fair of me to say, here is all the negatives of vaccines. That is not informed consent. That is one side of the picture. And to truly have informed consent, you would know all sides of the discussion. And it's not right to only present one side.
No, that's the thing, though. What I'm referring to is the way that you said it. You were really only presenting one side, in my opinion. It's that unless you're in these versus, I didn't hear anything about the risks of giving that vaccine to that baby, the amount of aluminum in it and in the brain and all those things. There's, unless mom has Hep B in a positive, there's absolutely no reason. The risk is so high that these children, and I waited. Luckily, it came out the year my son was born, and it was our pediatrician that said, yes, it's fresh, this is new, you don't have Hep B, let's wait, is what she said. Like you just said, maybe it's beneficial at teen years. So the pediatrician talked, I didn't know Dr. Paul at the time, pediatrician talked Ryder into getting, and Ryder asked me, and I don't want to get this. She just told me what this was. So he got it, and I almost lost my child. He was severely depressed, and his brain couldn't handle the amount of aluminum in it, even as a teenager. So to me, I'm like, wow, I'm glad I didn't give it at birth. I probably would have lost my child. So I guess that's the thing is,
yes, I understand.
Are you going to present both sides? Are you going to explain the aluminum in there? Or do you feel like you can't do that because that puts you at risk?
Oh, no. No, I can do that because that is part of the information that they need. And that is part that we go through when we have the package insert there with us and we go through, okay, here's the ingredient list. And then parents will be like, why is that in there? And I explain why aluminum is used as an adjuvant. And I explain what other things we know aluminum is capable of doing as far as negative side effects. And then we go through the other ingredients that are in there and we can talk about what are these there for and what are the potential side effects of those. But yes, it is. Okay. That is also part of the discussion.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that, because that is the issue, is that it does have to be both sides. And right. Both sides have to be very honest too. Right. That it's just like saying that the benefit of, like you said, the benefit of polio, maybe if you're going to another country, but there's no benefit for it here. And making sure that we share with these parents that deaths do occur from the vaccine, reactions, injuries, all those things, so that they can understand both sides. And I'm sure what you do very well, because you're very kind and loving, and I can absolutely feel that, is to be compassionate. And when they're concerned or they're worried, you're going to be able to just be there and listen. Mm-hmm. Do you ever say, if it were my child?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I'm just curious. So were your kids vaccinated?
Yes, because I wasn't aware of both sides of the story until about 2 years ago. So yes, my kids were fully vaccinated up till college.
Okay. And I'm just asking because I think it's important for people to know that all of Dr. Paul's kids were fully vaccinated. As a pediatrician, nothing going to change anything. You were educated to believe that vaccines were safe and effective. Mm-hmm. So knowing what you know now, would you vaccinate your children if you were just having them? Because you're really young enough, you could have some more.
Okay. I would do it very differently. I would look at their risk factors for each individual vaccine, and I would decide for each vaccine, for each child, what does the benefit outweigh the risk for this mm-hmm. vaccine? So yes, I would do it differently if I had to do again.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the thing too. I think when parents are concerned, I don't believe that pediatricians feel like they can say, if you're really concerned, hold off. Don't vaccinate right now. Your baby's at home. You're safe. You're not traveling. You don't have to vaccinate. And I think that's where the risky part comes in, is I believe parents need to know that they don't have to vaccinate, whereas they feel like they do. And it's too risky for a pediatrician to say that to them. Do you ever find yourself in that dilemma that maybe some of these parents shouldn't be vaccinating?
Let me say something else about your point here.
Okay.
A lot of pediatricians do truly believe that vaccines are the most amazing thing that we have to offer to our patients.
Yep.
And I wouldn't say that's what I believed 5-6 years ago, but I thought that they were part of how to keep a child healthy. But truly, in pediatrics, vaccines are like our Bible, and yep. you believe it. It is a religion almost. Mm-hmm. And you were taught it by people that you trusted and that you knew for years, your attendings. You loved your attendings. You looked up to them. And I don't think those attendings did anything wrong. I don't think that they knew what I know now. They were taught a certain way, and they taught us a certain way. And we all believed we were doing what was right. But in order to see the other side of that coin, you do have to do a deep dive, and you do have to go and find the literature and find the studies and find the podcasts and find the books and take the courses and spend hundreds of hours to educate yourselves. Mm-hmm. And not everybody wants to go there. Nope. Some people have little kids. They don't have time. Okay. I get that. Some people don't want to know what they don't know because they don't want to think that they've done something maybe that's not ideal for children. Some people may not want to know for financial reasons.
Well, let's touch on that one real quick. Do you think that is part of it? Because pediatricians who do not vaccinate lose a lot of money. For a lot of reasons, and in Dr. Paul's case, lose insurance contracts.
Right.
Do you think that's a bigger piece of it than time even?
I don't, I truly don't think, and again, I could be being naive, but I truly don't think that the reason most pediatricians are so pro-vaccine is because they want to get a certain insurance payout or hit a certain bonus level. I really don't think that's the underlying push behind it for most pediatricians. I really believe it's because in their hearts, they believe that it is the best way to protect children from infectious diseases. And they truly believe that they are safe. So, yeah.
I'm going to add, I was right. You are beautiful and you are loving and you are naive. So what I want to point out with that is I don't think those doctors personally think of that financial aspect, but many of these clinics, it's not just about them. And if they don't vaccinate, and it's not that they're pushing vaccines, but if they start having Dr. Paul a practice, and I've heard this so many times and so many pediatricians, if they have a practice where they don't vaccinate, they do lose those insurances and then they can't survive that way. It has to be a totally different model. If right. you're not vaccinating, it's different. So if you've got a couple of pediatricians in an office that are, quote, supporting many households based on all the employees they have, I think they do have to think that way. And it's not a bad thing. You have to take care of yourself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
You're so sweet. You're way too nice.
I guess at the base of it, I believe most humans are innately good and kind. Mm-hmm. And I will try to give the benefit of the doubt. And I've known my partners, some of them for over 20 years. And mm-hmm. I think that they are good people and they do want to take good care of kids. But I see your point too. I guess I'll stick with my view for now.
Okay. And I was the same way. I was absolutely the same way until I kept thinking there's no way that it's this thing. But then meeting Dr. Paul and seeing what's happened and other pediatricians and people like yourself who have had to step out of that in order to practice the way they want to practice, that to me just says, and it's not, I don't know that they sit and lay in bed and think about how much money they're going to lose. I think it's that you're right. They do believe in the vaccines and they can't change that narrative. So that's my next question. How do we change indoctrination? Because don't you have to, for pediatricians to learn the right way, the ones who are in school, what has to happen to change that, in your opinion? Or will it ever change?
This actually might go back to what you were just arguing for. It almost, I think, will have to be financial at the base of it. I think it will have to be that the practices that kick people out and will not allow mm-hmm. any kind of an alternative schedule will have to see that they are losing patients by the dozens or hundreds mm-hmm. and start to think, wow, 2 years ago, my schedule was full and now I'm not. And what's behind that? And then you start looking at why are we losing hundreds of patients? Because patients don't trust us anymore.
Right.
And patients will forego medical care in order to be able to care for their kids the way they want to. As I'm getting new patients in this practice, people call me and they're like, I'm not anti-vax. I just want to be able to talk to somebody and have them talk to me and give me advice and be honest with me. I'm not anti-vax. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm not anti-vax either.
Right.
I'm just
pro-health,
pro-questions and pro-choice of let's look at it. And I think that it will involve them taking a hit to their bottom line. And they say, mm-hmm. wow, the demographic has really changed. And we've lost 30% of our mm-hmm. patients. I tried for the last 2 years to educate my partners. I would bring articles or bring things up. And I could not get my camel's nose under the tent. It was not going to happen. And I was not pushy. I didn't bring 8 articles. I'd bring one and I'd say, hey, can we talk about this at our Monday meeting? And we would talk about it in a very cursory way, but it was like, oh, that's Christine. That she's bringing another.
This sounds very familiar, I'm sure, for Dr. Paul.
Yeah. And I have tried that way. The other thing that I will say is, and this kind of builds on the patients might be the ones that change this. I'm in a group with 4 other doctors here in Kansas City. We named ourselves Doctors for Truth, and we give talks around Kansas City and outlying areas about what happened during COVID and the basics of COVID and the basics of the science of it, and then also the basics of the censorship that went on. And then we talk about the WHO treaty and what's coming up and what can you do politically to try to get your views heard and what can you do to protect your family. And at a lot of these events, there's 200 people. And so if these people are hearing this, then they talk to one or two other people, then it starts to get out there. And I'm just hoping as people are more and more educated that they start to vote with their feet.
Yep. And that's the thing. And I've said that all along. I totally agree with you that it's once people realize that, yeah, I'm going to get kicked. And we coach, Dr. Paul coaches these families. And we will say that is that, again, it's your choice whether or not you vaccinate. And if somebody's going to kick you out of your practice for your choices, you don't want to be there anyway. Because what if your choice for treatment on something else they disagree with? That's not the kind of person that should be and have your child's health is obviously not number one for their concern. So we'll tell them, leave, go somewhere else. And I believe the same way is at some point they're going to have to realize that you have to at least honor that informed consent, both sides, and let parents make the choice.
Yeah,
I've taken a lot of time, but I could talk to you forever. I wanted a girl and I got one boy. So if we could get a trade and I could get a girl out of that, it'd be awesome.
Maybe we'll get granddaughters.
Probably just to irritate him. I don't know. They're not even sure yet. But you know what? That's a really good point. Actually, I'm going to take another minute. Ryder disagrees with vaccines completely because he's vaccine injured. Didn't get the shots for COVID and all of that. So have you talked to your children? Are they, these girls are coming up there. I don't know if you have any grandkids yet or not, but
not yet.
Have you talked to them about, are they in on this? Do they understand vaccines?
They have seen my transition. I'm very passionate about everything I do. I don't do anything halfway. I learn it down to the nitty-gritty detail. And I think that they think sometimes I go a little overboard, and that's okay. They actually have a term for it. It's called typical mama behavior, or TMB. I do. If I'm going to learn something and be knowledgeable about it, I am going to know everything I can. Okay. And because I only want to tell people things that I know. And so during the COVID thing, I counseled them all. I said, you guys, I really am very concerned about this new technology. You all are very healthy kids. You are low risk. There is no reason that you as an individual need to get a COVID vaccine. And they understood that. They're three of them have been in college during this time and they have withstood it. And then my oldest one is, she has a real job and she has had to, she's in the medical field. She's a salesperson and she has had to go up to stand up for herself repeatedly to be able to keep her job. And yes, they understand my views on the COVID vaccine. And the oldest one is she's old enough now. She's starting to think about when I have kids, how am I going to do that? And starting to think about eating healthy and making sure her body is as healthy as it can be. And part of that she knows is what vaccines should I be getting now or when I'm pregnant or when I have the kid. And I will give her a copy of Dr. Paul's book.
When it comes out. Actually, Vaccine Friendly Planet also says, I think says don't get any shots when you're pregnant.
Yeah, the Vaccine Friendly book, the first one is great. And she can read that. And the kids, I think, are starting to look at everything very critically and think about it before they just do it. And not just vaccines, but they have learned to look at everything and question everything. Right. And I'm very happy for that. We don't always look at things the same way, but they are becoming better thinkers.
Right. And as they get older too, and especially when another life is dependent on their decisions, I'm glad that they have you. And Dr. Paul's always also, sometimes people don't listen to their own parents. Dr. Paul would also, I'm sure, love to talk to them because that is tough. Ryder's made a decision that he absolutely wouldn't vaccinate his children. And you have to make sure that your partner's the same. We hear a lot about families who, yes, they were all on board with no vaccines, but when something happens in the marriage and they get a divorce, then one of them decides, you know what, I want to vaccinate. And that's who the court gives the children to. And so hearing that over and over again, I think it's really important that our kids make those stands before they have children. And that's part of that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that. Wow. Whole new level.
Oh my gosh, I know. So if you ever want to know more about that stuff, we're there for you. Thank you so much for your time. Oh my gosh, I really appreciate it. And you are a super mom. You're very loving and kind. And that's definitely going to be something that serves a lot of your families.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you. I get to actually talk to the person that's on the computer. It's fun.
I know. Who does all the scheduling?
You're like a celebrity. All right.
His manager. Oh, I'm a. That's funny. Thank you. No one's ever called me a celebrity. My claim to fame is coaching Dr. Paul through all of his craziness. So that's what puts me on the map.
I understand. I have a nurse that works with me here, Ashley. And yes, she keeps me like on the straight and narrow.
Yay. Yes. Thanks again, Christine.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, everyone. It's me, Dee Dee, and I'm coming to you from my soul. I want to talk about compassion. Compassion, when I hear people talking about it, compassion to me is the ability to really sink into who we are. Compassion, I believe, is something that comes from our soul. I believe it's hard to have compassion if we have so much going on around us, or we start thinking about all the what ifs and the shoulds and the coulds and the would ifs. Whereas when we are compassionate, we're deep within ourselves and we connect. And we realize that spiritually and soulfully, the way that we're able to be compassionate and understand each other and what they're going through is just to truly have faith over fear and understand that other people's opinions and different things may just differ from ours. And like our talk today with Christine, she's so compassionate. She's so understanding and she's there for her patients. And a pediatrician that's able to do that, I believe that's a pediatrician who's very connected with their soul and understands that compassion is being totally present. Thanks for watching.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsandscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.